Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Meeting in Moscow between the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, and the President of the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin. The measure of this meeting turned on, would China provide lethal aid? That's the word that's used advisedly by the State Department. Would China provide lethal aid to Russia in its flailing efforts to overcome the Ukrainian defenses? I'm joined by Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News, Dickinson College visiting professor, as well as the Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy CEO. Jeff, a very good evening to you. It is good news to hear not lethal aid. That is a headline out of France, Agence France. I celebrate that. Lethal aid turns this into another kind of war. The U.S. would have to, in some fashion, ratchet up its opinion of China as a threat. I want to explore your thoughts about this meeting in Moscow, but first I want to pull upon your memories of 20 years ago on the 20th of March, which is now understood as the war start for the U.S. action, U.S. and allies action in Iraq. What are your memories of that date, Jeff, before we come to modern war fighting? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. My memories of that are quite vivid. I'd retired from the Army about a year or so prior to that occurring, and I'd been through a series of interviews. That's when I had been hired by CBS News to serve as a national security consultant, which I've done ever since. As we looked very clear that the invasion was going to occur in a matter of days, we were preparing for that. The actual evening of the invasion, I was literally sitting at a bar in Annapolis, Maryland. I remember distinctly I was teaching at the Naval Academy. I was drinking a beer, and I was very depressed because for the previous 30 years, in about every conflict, I had gone. I'd then spent time in Bosnia. I'd spent time in Kosovo. I commanded during the Gulf War. I even spent a little bit of time in El Salvador. So I had gone to all these things. And now I knew that I was like the old war horse or the old fire horse that no longer gets to pull the fire wagon. But I had a lot of friends of mine who I knew were going into harm's way in a matter of hours, if not minutes. As I sat there in that sort of depressed state, listening to the news that the attack was beginning, my cell phone rang, and that's when I did my first interview for CBS with a station somewhere in the country on my thoughts as the war began. And I remember, by the way, quickly when May came around and we watched Mr. Bush land on the aircraft carrier with the big mission accomplished banner, I was in New York with my producer at the time, and she turned to me and she said, "What do you think is going to happen?" I remember distinctly saying to her at the time, "I think it's going to be ugly for a while," never imagining that it'd be ugly for about 7, 8, 9 more years. And along the way, 4,614 young Americans would be killed and over 32,000 wounded. So last Monday, my thoughts began with Army Specialist David Hickman, who was the last American killed in Iraq in November of 2011.
To 2023, too many villains, too little time, Colonel. We come to the announcement, not lethal aid from China to Russia. Now, there have been reports over these last weeks that there is lethal aid or something flowing that is a war fighting, drone technology, drone parts. I can't tell. At this point, are you satisfied that China's been persuaded not to wage into this conflict and that looks a loser?
Not for sure. Persuaded is the right word. Maybe deterred is the right word. The Chinese are a major training nation, I think, has begun to believe two things. One is Vladimir Putin is losing. And number two is, as a training nation, very interested in economic recovery, but they're not interested in being isolated from the Western markets, which might well occur. So I thought in the aftermath of this particular summit, I saw a historian seem to sum it up well using a Chinese phrase, which was, "Loud thunder, but few raindrops." We expected either A, as you suggest, overt military assistance that was not forthcoming, though the Chinese are perhaps providing some things like drones and microchips, which are useful to the Russians in their production, but not the overt military aid of artillery or missiles or artillery ammo, for example, or small arms ammo. That did not occur. The second thing was the expectation that perhaps the Chinese might call for a ceasefire. Mr. Putin might have welcomed that as an opportunity to refit his forces. That didn't occur either, and there was some talk that President Xi would have a conversation with President Zelensky. And so far, at least, John, now 24 hours after he departed, that hasn't occurred either.
We go to the European Union because the war continues to grind on what appears to be a stalemate somewhere along the lines of the Donbass, a stalemate with the season changing around the combatants, mud season followed by tank season. We come to a report you bring to my attention in these last days. Headline, EU nations rush to scrape up 1 million artillery rounds for Ukraine. I recall that NATO needs 1 million rounds. Ukraine asked for 1 million rounds. And the U.S. is looking for what it can from its allies, from its customers over these last years. This is big ammo, the sort of stuff that you handled, Colonel, for 30 years. Can they find it? Does it exist, or do we have to start all over again?
Well, it does exist, but what the Europeans are doing, and they've now announced a pooling by of up to 2 billion, I should say, euros, particularly for artillery ammo production and procurement. And it seems their intent is pretty much to scrape what is left of their wartime stockpiles, and then by accelerated production using that $2 billion euro fund, then expand dramatically their particular production, and doing so have the wherewithal to replenish their stockpiles as well as continue to provide material assistance to the Ukrainians, who claim they'll need up to 250,000 rounds of artillery on a monthly basis as this war continues. And of course, that parallels what's happened here in the United States, John, and you and I have talked about it a good deal, where the United States buy investments of up to $1 billion over the next, every year for the next 10 years or more to expand our production, and over the coming year to expand our production of artillery by 500%. Now, if all this can come together, the Europeans say they can produce up to 1 million artillery rounds on an annual basis. Again, that's what's promised right now. We'll see if that can, in fact, be delivered.
The question about the stores in NATO, is that a profound matter now, Jeff, your measure? Is NATO feeling inadequate, threatened by a provocation of Russia, and without adequate ammunition, they might have to react defensively?
I think I'd answer yes and no. I mean, their supplies of ammunition, material are inadequate. There's no doubt about it. The Europeans basically fell into the assumption in the aftermath of the Cold War that large-scale conventional warfare would never happen again on the European continent. It might happen elsewhere in the world, but it would not happen in Europe. And their planning and their preparation, their forces reflected that. Most people say if you took the expenditure rates of what the Ukrainians are doing right now, the Bundeswehr could defend Germany for 2 days, maybe 2 days. That's it. So their stockpiles are pretty woefully short. That being said, they know another thing. They know right now the one thing the Russians are not is they're not a conventional threat to Europe right now because they can barely sustain what they're doing in Ukraine. We have reports in the last day or so, John, of train loads of T-54s and T-55 tanks being pulled out of storage the Russians have and moving in the direction of Ukraine, which I think suggests how desperate they are in terms of equipment. And we know, based on their own comments, how desperate they are in terms of things like artillery ammo. So for the moment, at least, I would say, based on what's happened to them, the Russian Federation doesn't pose a conventional threat to Europe. But the Europeans understand that now we're shifting into a whole new world, and Russia, if it can survive this conflict, might over time rearm and become that conventional threat, and they want to be ready.
Clues about the future. You bring to my attention a release from the Department of Defense about additional security assistance for Ukraine. This is a puzzle because it's a long list of weaponry, lethal aid, some what I'd look to be augmenting lethal aid, and it adds up to, I'm not certain, so I want your thoughts, Colonel. Demolition munitions and equipment for obstacle clearing, mine clearing equipment. I'm cherry picking, Jeff. You understand.
Absolutely.
And, thermal imagery systems, optics and laser finders, riverine patrol boats, AT-4 anti-armor weapon systems, high-speed anti-radiation missiles, more HIMARS, more rounds. Does this look like defensive weaponry, Jeff, especially that part about, you know, mine-clearing equipment? How to read this list?
Well, the aggregate, I think, suggests for offensive military operations. Things like HIMARS rockets, AT-4s, and artillery ammo. Yeah, we've provided those things for a long period of time. I also think it's significant, up until the last couple of reports, the United States would also release the number of rounds that they were providing the Ukraine. They no longer do that. They just say artillery ammunition, 155. No idea of how many. But if you add that up with things like clearing minefields, bridging, which we provided them in the last tranche, things like riverine patrol boats. Well, you're going to cross some rivers if you look at where the Ukrainian forces are raiding right now, particularly in Zaporizhia. That all suggests to me this is preparation for the offensive. And then you put that in a broader picture, John. We know that some of the Leopard 2s that were promised to Ukraine about a month ago have started to arrive. We know that the training of Ukrainian crews on the Patriot system has gone very, very well. And there are reports that within a month or less, those Patriot batteries, the two that are being provided, could be arriving in Ukraine. We've even heard in the last few days that the Pentagon is saying the arrival of the M1 tank may occur as early as this fall because we're going to give them an older version, but accelerated far beyond what we expected. And then beyond that, John, we even have members of the United States Congress, particularly in the Republican Party, in the House and the Senate, on the committees that are appropriate, Armed Services, talking about the fact the United States should provide DPICM, improved conventional munitions, which is very useful, and we used it a lot in offensive operations in Iraq when I commanded back in the Gulf War.
The clue that we had several weeks past, I remember you and I exchanged about it, was an M60 chassis mounted with bridging equipment up to 60 feet. I asked you at the time, what the heck kind of defensive work is this? What are they going to do? Are they second story men? And your answer was, no, there are a lot of rivers in Ukraine. There are a lot of rivers to cross in Crimea, Jeff. Is that what that equipment's about?
Could well be, John. These are the ABLBs, the assault vehicle launch bridges, that can be used. And you want to use those in concert with a heavy armor, heavy advance, because they are designed to support the weight of a tank or of a Bradley. And you want to be able to go up to a bridge that's been destroyed, drop that bridge, so that the tanks can be moving rapidly. You don't want to have to pause, because if you have to pause, you expose yourself to targeting because you're masked, number one. And number two, you allow your adversary to prepare the defenses as you continue the assault. You want to maintain speed. And that's why bridges like that, that you can put down quickly and continue the momentum of the offensive, are very, very critically important.
This is the moment when Holmes turns to Lestrade and says, "Say what you mean, Inspector. What do you think is going on?" Jeff, what's going on here? Are they building offensive power for a strike?
Absolutely, without question. I mean, the Ukrainians that I talked to have been talking about this for some period of time, that they wanted to, first of all, mass equipment and manpower. That's why in the commitment of forces around Bakhmut, they will tell you they've largely committed their territorial forces in the defense of Bakhmut. Oh, by the way, they've done pretty doggone well, frankly, and they've done the one thing the Ukrainians were trying to do, bleed the Russian forces, while maintaining their more professional forces in reserve, either to guard against a breakthrough or in preparation for offensive, while at the same time beginning to stock material needed for an offensive, additional artillery ammo. One of the other things that's in this most recent tranche, spare parts, because you'll run through a lot of equipment in the offense, bridging, Bradleys, tanks, all those are being massed. All we're waiting for is hit the critical mass of material and manpower, and then the weather, the ground to dry out, I think we'll see this offensive begin.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News, also visiting Professor Dickinson College, the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. When we come back, Japan in Ukraine, Germany in Japan, Japan in India. What does it mean? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bauer.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.